So welcome everybody to the fourth of a series of shiurim on the issue of how and in what circumstances halacha adapts to modern times. We've had three classes so far. In the first class we looked at the structural issues surrounding the Chasimus HaShas, the sealing of the Gemara, and how changing the halacha after the Chasimus HaShas is a technically tricky thing because of all sorts of reasons that we discussed in that class, Yeridus HaDoiros and the acceptance of the Gemara as binding by the Jewish people, etc. In the second class, we went on to look at the issue of reasons for mitzvahs and whether the reason for a mitzvah, particularly a derabbanan mitzvah, will affect the outcome of the halacha in that particular area. So if the reason goes away, does the halacha go away or does the halacha change? And we try to find some areas in which we could draw some general principles as to when the reason does affect the mitzvah and when it doesn't. In the last class, in number three, we looked at the slightly more controversial issue of Chazal and their scientific knowledge and where scientific changes occur in society, where that affects a change in the halacha and where it doesn't. And we saw last time that there were a number of factors. There are some variables which would, in many ways, produce a change in halacha, and there are background issues behind them, and we talked about those, some of which are more controversial than others. For example, we saw last week, we examined in detail the question as to whether Chazal could have been wrong, incorrect in their scientific knowledge, whether their science was based on non-Jewish sources or whether it came from Sinai. We saw many of the Rishonim that dealt with that, Rav Hirsch as well in the Achronim. We looked at the opposite view that science, if it conflicts with Chazal, we have to assume the science is wrong and Chazal are right. And we looked at various approaches in the middle. One approach which I raised last week and said that I deal with this week is Nishtane HaTeva. Nishtane HaTeva deserves a whole class in and of itself. It's a major source of potential halachic change in this society in which we live, and we have to examine today how this works. Nishtane HaTeva literally means that nature has changed. And the question is, the nature of what? The obvious explanation that we're going to deal with today is that maybe the underlying physical realities around us are different from those which existed in the time of Chazal. And whereas Chazal made an observation which was entirely accurate at the time, that observation no longer applies halachically just because things have changed and the nature of things around us has changed. And we're going to see there are some areas of society where unquestionably that is correct. Something obviously worked in a certain way then, and it just works in a different way now, and there doesn't even seem to be any controversy over it. In other areas, it seems that Nishtane HaTeva is a stretch. Yeah, to argue that certain things have changed is really becoming a little bit difficult. And in certain areas, we don't see Nishtane HaTeva at all. For example, we saw last time there was a debate in the Gemara in Pesachim between the Jewish and the non-Jewish astronomical societies, as it were, as to whether the sun goes around or the sun goes back over the. So we talked about that last week. Nobody that I've ever seen suggests, well, the sun used to do this, and now Nishtane HaTeva, now the sun does this. That obviously is ridiculous. And I don't think anyone would suggest that. However, there are cases in between that and the other extreme, which we're going to have to decide, are we going to jump on the Nishtane HaTeva line or not? There is another area in which Nishtane HaTeva applies, or may apply, which we're going to talk in Mirat Hashem about next week, which is an also controversial issue, which is what about changes in social reality, not physical reality? That Chazal made certain statements about women. Do those hold true today? Chazal made certain statements about non-Jewish people. Do those hold true today? Has there been a change in social realia, if you like, which results in a change in halacha? That's a very difficult topic, which we will get to next week. Today, we're doing the slightly easier topic of physical changes. We don't see the expression Nishtane HaTeva used in the Gemara. However, we do experience that we do find that the Gemara sometimes takes for granted that the way things worked in earlier ages is not the way things work today. Let's look at two examples in source number one and source number two. Says the Gemara in Sanhedrin, "Hakol moedim beben tisha shanim v'yom echad shebi aso bia." At what age is, and we're going to see a whole range of different subjects today, at least 25 different areas of halacha. Okay, you have the right sheet? Okay, sheet number 4. Got it? There we are. We're going to see a whole range of different halachic areas. And the first one here is, at what age is a sexual relationship with a young man considered to be a real sexual relationship? And says the Gemara, Hakol Moedim Bebein Tisha Shanim V'Yom Echad Shebiyaso Bia. Everyone agrees that a boy from the age of 9 is able to have what's considered to be. Now, that's not suggesting that this is a way to conduct, you know, our social life. It's just saying in a practical sense, just like you'll have lawyers and doctors discussing cases on a technical level, which are not necessarily recommended societal practice. Nevertheless, it's saying, what is the halacha if this happens? Everyone agrees that that is considered to be a sexual relationship. Pachas mi ben shmana, under the age of 8. She'ein bi'asabi, everyone agrees that a boy is not capable of having a sexual relationship. Lo nechaku ela ben shmana, but there's a machloikas about an 8-year-old. The Beis Shammai Sabri, Beis Shammai hold, Gamirim Midoirish Rishonim, we can learn halacha from the way things worked in earlier ages. Well, Beis Hillel Sabri and Beis Hillel hold, Loi Gamirim Midoirish Rishonim. We cannot learn from earlier ages. Rashi says, Shehayu Moilidim Ben Shmoina Shana, Kiri Afinu Lekaman, and the Gemara goes on to explain how in Tanakh, it does a little bit of mathematics and shows how it was possible and how in fact it happened that men, young men, boys, produced father children at the age of 8. Beis Shammai say, well, if it was good enough for them, if it worked for them, well, why can't it work today? And Beis Hillel say, you know something? Things don't work today like they did then. In those days, they were able to father children at 8. Today, it's 9. Now, this is very interesting because we do find in this particular area, things do change. For example, the average age only 150 years ago, which women reached menstruation, was 15 and a half. And now it's 12 and a half. What changed in 150 years? Then that's a very, very significant shift. And therefore, we see the Chazal were, if you like, open to the idea that things have changed and things maybe don't work quite the same way anymore. In a very different example, in number 2, the Gemara in Megillah says, Tan Rabbanim, Yemos Moshe ad Rabban Gamliel, from Moshe Rabbeinu until Rabban Gamliel, which is a good 1,500 years, 1400 years, Lo yihayu lomdin Torah ela mu'umah. They would only learn Torah standing up. You weren't allowed to learn Torah sitting down. Mishemes Rabban Gamliel yarad chayli ya'olam. When Rabban Gamliel died, the world became gradually sicker, weaker. Okay, v'hayu lomdin Torah miyushim, and they had to learn Torah sitting down. Behind this man, that's what we mean when we say Mishemes Rabban Gamliel bottle covered haTorah. Which is a Mishnah, I think, at the end of Sota, which is when Rabban Gamliel died, take a sheet here, Kovod HaTorah was decreed. And therefore, the Gemara here, again, seems to take for granted that people used to be stronger, now they're weaker, and therefore the halacha has to change. We all have to learn Torah sitting down. Sorry, are you dizzy? I'm trying to shut the door. Okay, so there are indications in Chazal that things do change as society changes and the physical realities change. However, the phrase Nishtane HaTeva only appears a little bit later. And now we're going to look at 23 different cases of Nishtane HaTeva. In Yad Hashem, over the next hour, we're going to see, an hour and 5 minutes, lots of different areas. And again, we're going to try and work out where we can predict that there's going to be a change of nature, and therefore a change of halacha, and where perhaps it's going to stay the way it was. There are such varied cases, we're going through the whole of life, if you like. A1, eating rotten fish. Okay, why do I bring this up? Because this is a classic case. Says the Gemara, I'm a Rav, one of the rabbis from the beginning of the period of the Amorai, the Gemara period, says, Amali Ada Tzaida, Ada the fisherman, once said to me, Tavra, this particular kind of fish, Samach lemisrachei mali. It's at its best just before it rots. It's just going off and smelly. You know, fish at the best of times is not such a great smell. But when fish is going rotten, that's the time to eat it. Now, adatsada doesn't sound to me to be like one of the great Gedolei Hapsak of the generation, but he's a fisherman. He knows his fish. If a fisherman doesn't know his fish, who does? Says Tosfos, and we're going to see. And I want you to be aware of this. Often it's Tosfos, again, we saw in the second share, often it was Tosfos that was open to the idea of a change. We saw with Mai Magulim, with open waters, etc., etc., and Mai Machronim. Here also, Tosfos is open to the idea that things have changed. Will be Zman Hazer, these days, he says, Tosfos Sakana the Mechel Somach HaSiruchen. It's dangerous to eat things before they rot. It's actually unhealthy. People get sick from that. Says Tosfos, Shema Nishtameh. Maybe things have changed. K'moy harufuah shebashas, just like all the medical advice in the Shas, which we'll deal with in a minute. She'ein Tovus bezman hazeh, and we know that that medical advice doesn't work today. Why doesn't it work today, says Tosfos? Nishtameh hateva. Now that's not the same answer that the Rambam gave last week. The Rambam's answer to why Chazal's medical advice doesn't work today is because it was wrong. It was the best they could do in the time that they in the time in which they lived, but it was incorrect. It was inaccurate. Tosfos isn't saying that. Tosfos is saying, well, no, maybe their medical advice did work, but people's bodies just don't work today like they did 1,000 years before Tosfos, and therefore, if you eat rotten fish in those days, it was good for you. In these days, it's not. Yes. This is 1,000 years after Rav spoke to Ada the fisherman. And he gives another answer. Oh, Shema, Naros, Debavel, Ma'aluloi Tzvei. Maybe the rivers of Babylon, it sounds like the beginning of a song, but it's not, the rivers of Babylon were kept the fish better. And maybe it was a special kind of fish, which again is an answer we saw last week, which maybe you could say it's a different circumstance. This kind of fish, that kind of fish. But the first answer is the one I was interested in, which is Nishtane Hateva. Dealing with the medical advice and moving on, look on the top of page 2. I brought you a short quote from the Shadon Tshuva's Chalas Yoyer, where he says the following. It's not possible, it's not even allowed, to use the medical procedures that Chazal recommended. And he gives three reasons, of which we'll see one of them is Nishtane Hateva. Hey Mitzad, hey the Yedias Perush Hamilas. We don't know exactly what Chazal were referring to. Hey Shemus Ha'asavim, the different herbs and grasses, the Zachro Chazal, because obviously the words are written in complex Aramaic, and maybe we just take a sheet as you come past. Maybe we'll get the wrong herb, and obviously the last thing you want to do is mistranslate the herb and end up eating arsenic or hemlock or something like that. That's the last thing you want. Also, hey mitzad herde yidias kamusa matashmishem. Maybe we don't know the exact amounts. There are some medications in which, if you take them in small quantities, they're beneficial. If you overdose on them, they're very dangerous, and therefore that's another reason why we don't do it. And the third one, which I'm most interested in, hey mitzad shenishtanu hadoiras v'hatavim. Things have just changed. The generations have changed. Come on, shekosu shetosfes, as tosfes brings, aposki v'kama duch tefidina, as many, many examples of that, where the generations have changed. An interesting example which has more relevance lahalocha lemaisa, please, take a sheet. There aren't many people here, no doubt, who like eating rotting fish, or indeed taking Chazal's medical advice, and nobody would do that today. There is an interesting example which is a little bit more up to date in the kitchen. The Chazal say that there is a problem eating meat and fish together. It's not a problem of kashrus. There is no issue of basar v'chalav there, fish or parav. Everyone agrees fish or parav. There are later people who have minhagim not to eat fish with milk, okay? But that's a different issue. According to the Gemara, fish and milk is fine. The only shaila is fish and meat. So the Gemara says eating fish and meat is dangerous. This is some kind of sakana, some kind of danger. It doesn't say because of kashrus, it says because of health issues. And we paskin that, and the Mephoshim bring, the post can bring that down. The shaila is how far do we go? Do we have a problem cooking meat and fish together? Do we have a problem with them in the same oven? Do we have a problem eating them at the same table? Do we take it as far as we take it with basar v'chala, with meat and milk? So if you look here from an extract from the Chasson Sefer, he brings down the Rambam. Now the Rambam omits many of the halachas of that would prevent us from cooking meat and fish together. He just leaves them out. Says number 6, the Mikol Makam Havalela Rambam Lahavi Al Kopam the Asa Litzlois Dagim in Basa. Why didn't the Rambam bring down that it's also to cook meat and fish mamash together? The Hari Hu Ahim Shid Akal. He just leaves out everything. Why doesn't he bring those? It seems the answer is that he knew that nature had changed. Just like Tosfos says, in other words, the Rambam understood that in the time of Chazal, it was more dangerous to eat meat and fish together, and therefore, even though we don't mamash eat them together today, we do, says the Rambam, have less of a problem cooking them in the same oven. I'm not passing any shilas in Hilchos Kashrus. Please ask your local rabbis that. But he's bringing down the fact that the Rambam leaves that out. But then the Chasson Sofer brings in an important thing. says, we don't rely on this, okay? We certainly don't eat them together. Because we have other issues. Maybe the meat and fish were prohibited by Chazal, and as we said last time, you can't go back on that because it was a davar b'minyan. It was something which was prohibited in a quorum, as it were, and we cannot override it. The Esher, the Lois Shas was there, Kol Hani Terutzim, and maybe, he says, none of these reasons about Nishtana Atava apply, which from Hachi Anu Nizharim Minhag Avoseinu B'yadeinu, of the Avoseinu Torah. Minhag Avoseinu Torah. He brings another suggestion, that even when we say Nishtana Atava, maybe the underlying reason for the halacha has changed, but what we do have now is a Minhag. And you can't mess with a Minhag. Because a minhag has got nothing to do with the reason for the halacha. A minhag is a minhag simply because people do it. As long as it's not a minhag shtus, meaning it's a minhag that goes against the halacha, in which case we have to stop the minhag. But if it's a minhag, which is, if you like, parva, it doesn't go against the halacha, although it doesn't seem to have a basis in halacha, it's not so straightforward to turn around and change the minhag. Kidneyus is a perfect example. I know this time of year, everybody likes to think about kidneyus. It's everybody's favorite bugbear at Pesach time. Everyone's saying, why do we have a problem with kidneyus? And there's no question, according to Chazal, that eating kidneyus on Pesach is completely parava, as it were. The Chazal don't say it's prohibited, the Chazal don't say it's mandatory, it's just whatever. You want to eat beans, eat beans. If you don't. The Ashkenazim took on minhagim not to eat various types of kidneyus. And there's minhagim and minhagim. According to the Chafen Sofer elsewhere, he points out that minhag actually has a state of a doraisa. Because minhag is based in the halachas of neder. If you make a neder not to eat chocolate from now till Pesach, then chocolate becomes prohibited min haTorah for you. It's more than a drabonon. It's more than a drabonon. Eating chicken and milk is a drabonon. Eating chocolate, if you've made a neder not to eat chocolate, that's a problem on a Torah level. Therefore he says that don't mess with minhag. Even if you think the halacha, the reason for the halacha is going away, you can't mess with the minhag. And we find this, it's not so straightforward now to just allow people to eat kidneys. By the way, that's one of the reasons why people ask questions in kidneys. They say, I don't understand. Kidneys doesn't make sense. If it's prohibited to eat beans, why is it allowed to eat coffee? Because coffee is made from beans. The same beans that make coffee are the same kind of beans that make all the stuff, the chickpeas that you tell me I can't eat. What's that? Chocolate too? And why is this not a question? Because the origin of kidneys is a minhag. And they didn't have a minhag not to drink coffee because they didn't have coffee. And they didn't have a minhag not to eat chocolate because they didn't have chocolate. When these minhagim were formed, these things didn't exist. Well, they did, but they were eaten by South American tribes. So don't ask a kasha on kidneys. Why is this allowed in this? Why is in this place is the oil yes allowed, but in this place the oil is not allowed? You can't ask a kasha on a minhag. If there was a minhag to do it, then that they do it. And if there was a minhag not to do it, then they don't do it. It's not based. No rabbi ever turned around and said, made a list of kidneys that were allowed and that weren't allowed. It was based on minhag, and therefore you can't ask a kasha. As I said, if there's a minhag that goes against the halacha, when I was growing up in many shuls during the Birkas Kohanim, people had a minhag to turn away their backs on the Kohanim. Seen this? They turn away from the Kohanim. Why? Because somebody told them that you're not allowed to look at the Kohanim's hands, and there are different halachas about that. So they kind of say, if you're not allowed to look at the Kohanim, then it's dangerous and we're superstitious, then maybe you should turn your head away, and then that turned into turning away. Now, turning away from the Kohanim turns into actually the opposite of the halacha. The halacha is you must face the Kohanim during Birkas Kohanim. So there a minhag, as if you like, defeated the halacha, which is not allowed. Then you have to get rid of that minhag. But most minhagim aren't like that. The minhagim are basically neutral. And therefore, if there's a minhag, you have to do it. Unless you want to change your community. If you change your community, fine, you can change your minhag. I can't hear what you're saying. Why is chocolate? Because there was never a minhag to ask. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it comes from a bean or it comes from outer space. There was no halacha. Had there been a halacha in the Gemara that what comes from a bean is kidneys, then whatever beans we discover over the ages, they'll be the beans. Okay? But no one ever said that. No one ever said there was a problem with beans. Different communities said, we're not going to eat this. Oh, we're not going to eat this. Oh, we're not going to eat this. Because no one ever said we're not going to eat chocolate. Right. Because they had cholent beans. They had beans. They had deblach and different things. What's this? I'm not getting into a whole discussion about kinyas. I'm resisting the temptation. If it's a question on kinyas, I'm not answering it. Because I want to move on. Okay? All I'm pointing out is that when you're talking about changing halacha, even if you come to the conclusion that the reason's gone away, or the ishtane hateva, or whatever it is, if there's a minag, there's a minag. And you can't get rid of a minag. Yes? That's a great question. I don't know. I don't think there is a time frame. A minhag is a reality on the ground. It's facts on the ground. As people change it, it's like sneers. What is considered to be tanua in this generation, in the last generation was a subtle difference, in the next generation was a subtle difference. You know, people will change their dress habits over time. I suppose the first few people who do it are naughty. They shouldn't do that. And eventually that becomes a minhag. That's how minhagging works. No, there's no fixed time. Yes, you could, and people do. I'm not going to get drawn on that either. Let's go. Maim Entzayim. Now, I wonder how many people here have even heard of Maim Entzayim. People have heard of Maim Achronim, which is after the meal. Maim Rishonim, which is what we call washing before we eat bread. But there's also Maim Entzayim. The Gemara deals with the concept of water, achiyav, in the middle of a meal, to get up and do Netilas Yadayim with a kli and come back and carry on. But you probably haven't even come across this. So, says the Shulchan Aruch, here I want to point out a very important point. The Shulchan Aruch was writing in the 1530s, 1540s. And very often the Shulchan Aruch will see simply paskens the din of the Gemara, or din of the Rishonim, without any reference to Nishtane Hateva. And within 100 years after the Shulchan Aruch, there are people saying, oh, Nishtane Hateva. Now that's not because, that's not because things changed between 1530 and 1630. It's because people took a different approach to the nature of Nishtane HaTeva. You'll see what I'm talking about in the next few examples. Number 7. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Ben Basar Ladagim, if you're eating meat and then you want to eat fish, Chayva little mishum dekasha ledavarecha, you have to do a Netilas Yadayim because it's a kasha, it's difficult, it's possible that a person could get davarecher. What's davarecher? Tzara'as, okay? A disease. It's dangerous eating meat and eating fish. It's so dangerous, says the Gemara, that you have to, if you ate meat, you have to go to the sink and you have to wash until it's your diamond and you can come back. Now, I'm not sure, I think so. But Chamira Sakansa Meisura, and a Sakana is more stringent than Issa. We have this principle, if there's a danger to health, we treat the danger more seriously than we would treat kashrus issues, and therefore we don't say bottle b'shishim and things like that. Now, comes along the Magen Avraham, only 100 years after the Shulchan Aruch, in number 8, it says, the kashrus davaracher, what does it mean you get leprosy? The Eshet B'Zman HaZesh could be that in these days, ein sakana, there is no danger. Kolkach. So much. The Chazin and Kamat Varim, we see many things, Hamuskarim B'Gemara, which are mentioned in the Gemara, Shehkeim Sakona, they're dangerous, Luruach Ra, there's an evil spirit, we'll see what how that works later. Vashar Dvarim, and other such matters. Vaha'idna, but today, Eina Mazik, they're not dangerous. Why? The Nishtanu Hatfias, because things have changed, nature has changed. Vagam HaKolafi Teva Haratzas. And everything depends on the reality of the nature of the country. Now, as I said to you before, I don't think that he's suggesting that between 1530 and 1630, when he was writing, all of a sudden people don't get Tzara'as. I think he's being chaylik on the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is saying, I'm bringing down the din of the Gemara. If you have meat and you want to have fish, you have to wash your hands. And the Magen Avraham saying, no, you don't, because we just don't experience that kind of disease today. People, non-Jewish people eat meat and fish the whole time, and no one ever had a problem with it. And therefore, we're not going to be makpid on washing our hands today. People don't wash their hands. Then people might clean out their mouth, they may have a drink of water, they may have a piece of bread between eating fish, and they'll have a schnapps. You know, it's a good excuse to bring out a whiskey. But I've never seen anybody today run to the kitchen after the fish, after the gefilte fish, wash. And here it says meat and then fish. Okay, fine, I'm not getting drawn into meat and fish and then fish and meat, because I honestly didn't check it out. I don't know the halacha. But for sure, nobody does it between meat and fish, or between fish and meat. Who said? I don't know, you've never been in a kiddush? You have a little bit of chopped liver? You go to a hotel for Shabbos. So what do you eat first? What you eat first is what you can get to first. Okay? There's no order anymore. Okay? So everybody's around the smoked salmon, so first you go for the chopped liver.
You know what I'm talking about, right? And then when you finish the chopped liver, then you go for the smoked salmon.
No?
If there's any left. If you're sensible, you go to the beginning and take a plate of everything and put it on your own. Now, I'll give you another example. Number 9. Shulchan Aruch, again. Achol kol ma'achol v'loy achol melech. If you ate any food but you didn't eat salt afterwards. Shasa kol mashko, if you had any drink, v'loy shasa mayim, and you didn't drink water afterwards. Bayayin yidag mipnei re'ach hapeh. You would, by day, we're concerned that's going to lead to bad breath. Ubalaila, and at night time, mipnei ruach re'ach hapeh, also bad breath. Mipnei askara, and breathing difficulties. The Shulchan Aruch brings down the halacha. If you don't have salt after the food that you eat, you have to be concerned. You may get bad breath. You may have breathing difficulties in the night, etc. Comes along the Magen Avraham again and says, the Ha'idna today, Mishdana Hatzvi. That's it. We don't do this. Now, you could argue that today our food has a lot more salt in it than it did then, but I don't think. I think that's a product of the 20th century. I don't think that food in 1630 had more salt in it than food in 1530. So there's no change, I think, in society majorly between the Shulchan Aruch and the Magen Avraham, other than the Magen Avraham's taking an approach, which is the halacha has changed. You no longer have to worry about eating salt after your food because nature has changed and therefore the halacha has now changed. Another example. We're going to have a few examples now relating to reproductive issues, which are very, very interesting. All the examples so far have been somewhat less important to halacha. Okay, fine, eating rotten fish, you can take it, you can leave it. My men, I'm washing your hands in the middle of the food, in the meal, it's a halacha, but it's not a life and death issue. Here I'd like to get into a number of issues which really are much more critical, either halachically or even life and death. In Hilchos Nida, the Gemara paskens that in order for a woman to be considered a Nida, Deoraisa, with all the halachas that flow from that, being a kores, etc., etc., in order to be a nida deoraisa, a woman has to not only have blood flowing, but actually have what's called a hargasha. A hargasha means the sensation of blood leaving the uterus and passing over the cervix. Not leaving the body, but leaving the uterus and passing over the cervix. That's a hargasha of something that's happening very, very deep inside the uterus. Okay? Says the Shulchan Aruch, and he paskens that halacha, Dvar Torah, according to the Torah, Ein isha matama v'loy asra labara, a woman is not tamea, or asa to her husband on a deraisa level, okay, shetarga shiyata damli basara. It's only if there is a feeling, a hargosha, that blood is leaving the body. I didn't mean the body here, the actual external body, it means the uterus. The Chachamim made a gezerah al kesim on any stain that a woman would find, even without a hargosha, shenimsa begufa, either on her body, or the bigdeha, or on her clothing, shehitameya, that tameh on a derabonon level, the asura labara afilu lo higisha, and she's derabonon, she's tameya, even if she didn't have a hargosha. But there is a very, very big difference in halacha, for many applications between a person who is neither daraisa and neither darabonon. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens, the Lord of the Gemara, that if a woman didn't experience a hargosha, then she's neither darabonon, not neither daraisa. Now, the issue is today, women just don't experience this hargosha. They can't tell you that, yes, I felt something happen. Now, people experience other things, headaches, whatever it is. That's not the same thing necessarily. And therefore, today, do we still say that there is a din of hargosha, or do we say the din of hargosha has been changed because the body has changed? In number 12, Aval Mikol Makom, this is a modern tshuva. Mikol Makom, Mashikosav HaRambam, when the Rambam says, Shecheskas Hadam Shebarbar HaGosha, the generally speaking blood only comes out with the hargosha. That's why we say a woman is only Doraisa and needed with the hargosha. The Mashma Roy Pamim Hukach, because that's how blood comes out, it always comes out with the hargosha. Ubezev Vadai Nishtana HaTeva. Today there must have been a Nishtane HaTeva. Al Kopanim, Al Ri'iya Katana, Shel Tipa, and even now, on a tiny little drop of blood, Tipa Achas, Lecha Chazaka, there's no longer a Chazaka, Zubis Manazel. There's Chazaka that it came with the Hargosha. And now it could be that we establish the din of Nida Doraisa without a Hargosha. That actually is a very important change. The Aruch HaShulchan actually says a little bit different. The Aruch HaShulchan says that women do have hargoshes today. They just don't know they're having hargoshes today. Which is interesting. I assume he did a bit of market research. But you see,
even though that's a slight difference to say that women don't have haragoshes today, it's still on some level a nishtane hateva, because he's saying that women do have haragoshes, but they don't know what they are anymore. Well, that's also a change. Women used to be able to be in touch with things that were happening deep inside them in a way that they simply don't seem to be today. Now, you can debate why that is, sociologically, whether it's diet, whether it's the fact that we're living in a busy world and there's too much hustle, I don't know, whatever. You can write a PhD on the sociology of haragosha. But the fact of the matter is that women, on the whole, so we here as rabbis, do not experience this sensation of blood flowing over the cervical canal from the uterus. People don't know what's going on inside them. Okay. Well, neither is it something which happens in a woman's body. The only way you can establish that is by asking women, what do you feel, how does it feel? Yes, of course. I mean, there's no way that the Aruch HaShulchan is and the people are deciding women don't have haragosha based on their own sfora. Rabbis speak to people and they interview people and they see people and women say, I don't experience this. Look, you can do your own market research. Maybe things will change again. Maybe everyone's going to get so into their kind of holistic and nature side that they will once again feel haragoshes. But at the moment, the halacha has changed to establish nidah d'oraisa without a haragosha. Another example, veth kavua. This is very striking, and this is not something which is speculative. This is clearly a change. Says the Shulchan Aruch again, based on the Gemara number 13. Roiv hanashim yesh lahem vestos. Most women have a fixed vest, which means the time between one period and another period is a fixed time. The Gemara takes it for granted. It's not only a fixed amount of days, but it's to the hour. That women were able to predict that this time in the morning is when I'm going to have the next period. With absolute accuracy. Lirois bizman yadua. It's a known period. Could go in the Esrim la Esrim Yom, 20 days to 20 days, Mishloshim the Shloshim Yom. The Chol Isha Sheyesh la Vest Kavua, and what's the practical halacha? A woman who has a Vest Kavua, who has a fixed prediction, she knows exactly when her period is going to come. Baalea, Sheloi Bashar Svesta, she can have relations with her husband not at that time when she's expecting a period. They're in Tzricha Bedikalif Ne'atash, but she doesn't need to check that she's a neither, because she can assume, of course I'm not, because I know it's not going to be till such and such a time. Already, 100 years after the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach writes down the Eshed Bizman Azeh 14. Ein lovesas kol kach likvoa shas v'yayin. Women can't predict the hour of their exact vest kavua, and therefore maybe they have to be a bit more machmir. The whole day could be the day that she gets her period. And today I brought you from one of the modern poskim on Hilchos Nida, the Bali Hashulchan in 15. Ein nira lismach al zeh bizmanein. We can't rely on this at all today. She actually ein l'roiv nashim vest kavua. Completely different to what the Gemara says. The Gemara says most women have a vest kavua, and says the Bali HaShulchan today most women do not have a vest kavua. Okay, it's predictable within a certain range, today, tomorrow, yesterday, there are certain simanim, maybe yes, maybe this is a sign that this, but it's very much not an absolute science with most women, and some women maybe it is. But in the time of the Gemara, it was established that most women were like clockwork. And today, that just is not the case. Now again, I don't think this is in any sense a stretch. It was an observation in those times, and it worked like that. And now it works like this. The halacha has therefore changed, and women are no longer able to assume that just because they had the last period on a Thursday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning, so the next one will also be on a Thursday morning in our case. It doesn't happen that way. And therefore, there are halachas that come from that. No, but okay, maybe it wasn't 9:33 and 30 seconds, but there were hours, we counted hours based on the sun. If you have a little bit of experience with the sun, you can tell with some accuracy whether it's the first, second, third, fourth hour of the day. Now, let's look at another related example. In the time of the Gemara, Chazal say, that again, based on experience, who is the Bali HaShulchan? I'm not sure. I'm not sure who he is. He's a contemporary Posek. But this is, I'm sorry, I should have checked it out. I apologize. Homework, please. I can find out in 3 minutes. As soon as I get home, I'll look up his name at the front of the book. I can't remember who the Bali HaShulchan is. I know when I was in Smicha, everyone uses the Bali HaShulchan all the time. He wrote lots of very good sforim on Yoredea, on Hilchos Nida, on Hilchos Kashrus, Basav Chalav, etc., etc. I should know his name. I apologize. I don't know who he is. But as far as I'm aware, this is not a debate today. It's a reality. Most take 100 women and ask them, are you able to predict with absolute certainty when your next period is going to be? And most of them are going to say no. Now, look at number 16. A related halacha. In the time of the Gemara, Chazal say that when a woman became pregnant,
she would continue to experience her menstrual bleeding for at least 3 months, until the uber, until the fetus was visible at 3 months. So she should expect that 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, she's going to become a nidah because she's going to experience bleeding. Today, in many cases, in most cases, women pretty much stop their menstrual bleeding as soon as they get pregnant. In fact, that's one of the indications that they are pregnant, that they didn't have a period the next month. Now, not always, but often. Similarly, and in the opposite case, when women are nursing, the Gemara says women who are nursing a baby for 24 months will not see any blood, nidah blood during those 24 months. They can assume they will not be nidah at all. And with all the halachas that move from there, which is that they don't have to check before they're with their husbands, they're not nidah finished. Today, again, that's not the case. Women who are nursing do experience menstrual bleeding, and they cannot necessarily rely on the fact that for 24 months they will not be a nidah. And the shaila is, what do we do with that? Everything seems to have flipped. In the time of the Gemara, pregnant women did experience bleeding, and nursing women didn't experience bleeding. And today, pregnant women don't experience bleeding, and nursing women do experience bleeding. Are you still going to paskin the halacha? A woman comes to a rabbi and says, you know, what's my halacha? Do I have to expect I'm going to be a nidah or not? Are you going to paskin based on the Gemara, which is a reality different to the reality that we experience today? Or are you going to paskin based on the reality today? This is a big indication of a change in halacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein, number 16. You know, Rav Yisrael B'Tshuva's Rav Akiva Eiger. I've read Rav Akiva Eiger, Shekhasov, and he writes, now Rav Akiva Eiger was living in the early 1800s, okay, and he writes, Shekhasov, that after the Einenu, Royas, even though we see with our own eyes, okay, but not shaded down with our women, Demiyad, Shenis Abru, Mesulachas, Damim, okay, that as soon as they are pregnant, they stop bleeding, Vinishtanu Hatzvim, and therefore nature has changed. Says Rav Akiva Eiger, we see this. This is not a problem of the 20th century. Already in the 19th century, it was like this. Hachazina, on the other hand, we see equally in the Shulchan Aruch, okay, Sheva'inin Hukahubra, that we require her to be 3 months pregnant before we're going to say that she won't bleed. And therefore, he paskins based on the non reality. He paskins based on the Shulchan Aruch, which tells her that even though you may have stopped bleeding, according to the Gemara, you have to assume you will bleed. And even though when you're nursing, you may continue to bleed, the Gemara tells you you're not going to. Says the Rav Moshe, and he says, I can't do this. He first of all quotes a Bach, and he says that the Bach also relied on the fact that nature has changed, and he changed things for other halachas, and says, certainly says Rav Moshe for the issue of vest, of when to expect her period. Look at the end of the third line. She certainly should check herself during pregnancy. There's no reason why not. But when it comes to nursing, how can we be makel the minika with a nursing woman and say that she can't bleed? Everything's changed. Says Rav Moshe, you cannot block your eyes to the change of reality and pretend that she's not going to bleed because the Gemara says she's not going to bleed. And therefore he says the halacha has changed because he actually changes it only to be machmir. Okay, which is an interesting point. When it comes to pregnant women, he said, even though you're not bleeding, you should check yourself in case you do, because the Gemara says you might. But when it comes to nursing women, he says, you have to assume you will because nishtane hatzeva, which is interesting. Am I warm or is everyone else warm? Can I turn this down a little? I know this is a... I'll just turn it off for a few minutes, I'll turn it on again afterwards. Okay? When, if I see people going blue, then I'll know it's a simmon. Because in that area, we don't say nishtane hatzeva. Blue usually means you're cold. Let's go on. Here we have a very interesting situation on the top of page 4. Chazal understood, based on all of the medical knowledge that existed at the time of Chazal, the following. Look in number 17. The Tan Rabbanon. Ben Shiv'a, on number 17 on page 4. What's this? Yeah, we I mentioned this. I mentioned it. Ben Shiva Mechalin Alav Es HaShavas. If a baby is born in the 7th month of gestation, we will be Mechalel Shabbos for that baby. Ben Shmoina, but if it's born in the 8th month, Ein mechalalin alav es Shabbos. We will not break Shabbos for it. Now, if it's born in the ninth month, we assume also it's fully gestated, and we will. Chazal understood, and again, this was common medical knowledge at the time for all sorts of reasons, based on anatomical issues, mathematical issues, and also astrological issues, which come in terms of which month and which astrology sign is rising in which month. It was received wisdom that a baby which is born in the seventh month of gestation will survive, in the eighth will not, and in the ninth will. Now, so we have a baby that's born in the eighth month of gestation. What are we going to do with this baby? Chazal said it will not survive. Comes along the Gemara and says further, Sofik ben Shiva, Sofik ben Shmona, if we're not sure whether it's a 7 month or an 8 month, we're not allowed to break Shabbos. Ben Shmoina, if we know it's a Ben Shmona, if it's definitely an 8 month baby, gestated, Hari Huka Evan, it's like a stone. And you're not allowed to move the baby. It's muksa. The baby is not, no chance. It's a dead baby, effectively. Aval imoy, what do we allow you to do? The mother, shoicha, is allowed to lean over the baby, umenikaso, and feed it, nipne hasakona, because it's dangerous for the mother not to feed when she has milk, but not for the baby, because the baby is not going to survive. We only allow the mother to feed the baby because we're worried about the mother's health if we don't allow the mother to feed. Yes? No, but if she, in the long term, but in the short term, if she doesn't nurse when she has milk, she'll be in a lot of very... We're talking about when the baby's first born. And that's when the milk starts to come out. Okay, that's a good question in lactation, how that works. If she never nurses the baby, she won't have any milk. Is that true? I defer to your greater knowledge on these issues. We'll have a 10-minute interval while people discuss lactation methodologies. There will be milk. Right, so we have a medical stack here that there will be at least some milk, and therefore the mother will need to get rid of that milk to some degree. Okay, let's just take that as a given for now. Yes. Yes.
For another hour or so.
Yes, you are. There's a big difference there. Somebody who has a cheskas chias, somebody who was alive, has a chazaka that they're alive, and even if there's a 1 in a million chance that we can keep them alive for another 5 minutes, we'll break Shabbos definitely to do that. This baby does not have a cheskas chias. It was never alive. And then for something that was never alive, we don't give it the same chazaka that it was alive. This gets us onto another issue, which is we do not say in halacha that life in utero is the same as chayim outside, as life outside. And that impacts on the entire debate on abortion, which we're not going to get into now, but it's very clear that we do not regard a baby in utero as alive. The reason we will break Shabbos to save a pregnancy, which we do, is not because the baby is alive and we say v'chai bahem, which is the reason we break Shabbos to save a person who is alive. The reason we break Shabbos to save a baby in utero is because there's a separate principle of v'shamru b'nei Yisrael es Shabbos, that we can break one Shabbos in order that long term there'll be more shmirat Shabbos, which is why we break Shabbos for a pregnancy, because we assume the baby will be healthy, she'll give birth full term, etc., and the baby will go on to keep Shabbos, and therefore there's a net increase in Shabbos. For this baby, there's neither. There's neither chayim, the baby has a presumption he's not going to live, there's no increase in Shabbos, he has no cheskas chias, etc. Now, wait. The Gemara was written 1500 years ago. We haven't reached it today yet. Yes. So even if it's born alive, Chazal understood it will not survive. It will die shortly. Yes. Right. How the Sofik works, right? It's not a Sofik in... Have a look at the Shulchan Aruch. Have a look at the Shulchan Aruch already in the 15th century. The Shulchan Aruch, and we've seen this pattern a few times now, paskens the din of the Gemara. If a baby is born on Shabbos, we do everything we need in order to keep it going. That's only if we know it's a 9th month or a 7th month. If it's born in the 8th month, or Safek ben Zayin or ben Ches, even if we're not sure if it's the 7th month or the 8th month, we do not break Shabbos. Ela im kein gon rusar over Sephardim, if we see that its hair is formed and its nails are formed, then maybe we will break Shabbos because maybe we've made a mistake, maybe it's actually a more developed baby. And even in the time of the Tosfos, and we saw Tosfos do have more of a tendency to bring in different changes, the Tosfos in number 19 does say that in his day, if there was a baby that was an 8-month baby or a Sophic baby, they would break Shabbos for it, not because 8-month babies survive, but because we can never be totally sure. Maybe this is a 7th month, and therefore Tosfos effectively circumvent the din by saying we're not going to be totally sure. However, today, really starting from around 100 years ago, at the beginning of the 20th century, there is a lot of modern medical changes. Number one, our experience today is that babies of this age, born 8 months, do survive. Yeah, number one. Because we understand that babies survive, have more of a chance of survival the more gestated they are. And therefore, there's no logical reason to our modern medical minds, as far as I'm aware, why an 8-month would do worse than a 7-month. On the contrary, would do better than 7 months. Also, no, it's not correct? Tell me. That's interesting. Why is that? The development of the lungs. That's very interesting. I had heard someone... leave aside incubation for now. Is this a medical reality? Is this agreed upon by doctors that there is greater lung development with a 7-month baby and an 8-month baby? You'll have to get a bit of a medical conference on that. It's not for me to comment because I'm not a doctor. Shh. Look at the Chazon Ish. Says the Chazon Ish... These days, says the Chazon Ish, Nishtaneh Hateva. It just doesn't work the way it worked at the time of Chazal. In other words, he's not suggesting that Chazal were wrong. Nishtaneh Hateva doesn't say that. He's saying today, babies do survive. Kofi, Bechinas HaRoifim, the way the doctors have established, Shehosifu Hishtalmus, and now a baby can be born in these intervening stages and the baby will survive. And I brought you two sources, which I'm not going to read now because we're going to run out of time. They're 21 and 22. 21 is from Rav Vosner, okay? And 22 is from the Shmiras Shabbos, who both say that the advent of modern incubation and incubators completely reverse this halacha entirely. And because today we see with our eyes, look at number 21, Mikol Markham, I'll read briefly. Bahari Yaldi incubator. Kids were born in the incubator, Dahai Dahayom today, Nishtane Hamatsiyus Lagamri. Now, I'd like to suggest Nishtane Hamatsiyut is not the same as Nishtane Hateva. Nishtane Hateva means there's been a fundamental change in the way that the human body works. Nishtane Hamatsiyut means that the reality is, for whatever medical reason, these babies do now survive. And therefore, you cannot turn around and say that they're muksa and you cannot chas v'chalila. And now there is absolutely no suggestion that you will not save a baby in its 8 months. Yeah. Excuse me? Yes. Well, there's always Tosfos. Tosfos in number 19 said, not like the Shulchan Aruch, that the reality is that we always assume that maybe we miscalculated, and maybe it's a 7-month, and maybe it's a 9-month, and therefore we will be Mechal al Shabbos. But I don't know, as an interesting question sociologically, were there people, and maybe I haven't got time to research everything, but were there people paskening in the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries, and even 19th centuries, Halacha Lemaisa, the baby is an 8-month baby, it's muksa, you can't touch it. Or was the reality that somehow or other there was a way that they worked out that they could actually save the baby? I don't know, but there's no question that today, already for the last 100 years, the reality has totally changed. And I brought you this from the Shmiras Shabbos at the bottom. You can see he brings Rosh Hashanah Zalman. Now there's no Sophic whatsoever. Where there is an interesting question, however, which is a question that grows out of this, is in the issue of Yibum. And let me tell you how this would work. And this is something you may not have considered. If a woman is married to a man, and then unfortunately the husband dies and the woman has not had a child from that man, then she is halakhically obligated to either marry the man's brother, or as what we do today is to perform chalitza. In other words, which is a kind of divorce equivalent, which is where the shoe and the spitting and the whole thing. Now, what's for sure is she can't just go off and marry someone else until she's dealt with this relationship that she has with her brother-in-law, either by yibum, which they used to do, marrying him, or by chalitza, which they do today. Now, it's a relative rarity that this happens, because Baruch Hashem, most people who marry, their husbands do not die until they've had some children. Hopefully the husbands die in old age, and there is no yibum issue. But occasionally it does happen. It does happen. The time it actually happens these days more often is where people marry later in life. If somebody gets married at the age of 60 to a man at the age of 70, it's unlikely that they're going to have any children, okay? And if he then dies and has a brother, there may actually be a yibum issue if she then wants to remarry down the line, which is where it actually does come up. No, it's she. She has to have children from this wife. Yes, she does. She has to. Who he? The man who's died. From this woman, no? You have no child at all? Okay, let's leave that aside. The case here is as follows. The case here is as follows. It was very lively today. It's wonderful. The case here is as follows. What happens if a young couple marry and she has a baby which is an 8-month baby and the baby dies? Now, if she has a full-term baby and the baby is alive and then the baby dies, unfortunately, so she had a baby. It's just that the baby died. But she had a live baby. The baby died. She doesn't have to do yibum. It doesn't not that her children have to still be alive when the husband dies. She has to have had a child. But, if she has an 8-month baby and we tell her, when we say that this baby has no chance, and effectively this is equivalent to a miscarriage, even though the baby's sitting there, yeah, and then the baby dies, do we consider that was having a baby? Or did she really never have a baby? And this Shaila comes up in a number of situations. Look at number 23.
Someone who dies and leaves his wife pregnant. If the child is born and comes live into the world, even if it dies later in birth, the woman is exempt. She's exempt. She had a child, even though the child unfortunately died. She had a child. But that only applies if we know that the baby was fully developed. If the baby was born in the 8th month, who can say that she had a child? She just had, unfortunately, a non-child in those days. But even here, the Ramos says an interesting thing. The Ramos writing at the same time as Shulchan Aruch. The Bizmanaz, in these days, he says in the 1500s, even if it's not in the 9th month, only one day, milvad, apart from the day that she conceived, we'll say it's a good child. Even though we say in the Gemara, that a woman who had a baby in the 8th month cannot survive. Kfar Tom, who has their rabbin, shehachush machachish zeh. Many people have observed, even in the 1500s, that our experience is not like that. Ela she'anu tzrichim loymer, we have to say today, she'achshav nishtane ha'inyan. Things have changed today. V'chein hu b'kama dvarim. And this applies in many areas. And he brings down a tshuva of the Tashbats. Okay? And this actually may answer your question, that were there people paschaling in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 1800s, that the baby was mukser and couldn't survive. The Ramah does here in Hilchas Yibum seem to indicate no. Even he already said Nishtane Ha'inyan, things are not like that anymore, babies do survive, and the time from Chazal is now a time which is gone. Now, in this area of Yibum, you should know it's not so straightforward. There are those who do paskan indeed that the wife is exempt from Yibum, and I brought you a tshuva of the Rashbash, which was a contemporary of the, maybe a touch before the Ramah, where he says, I just want to draw your attention to a couple of lines in number 24. He quotes this case and says, is this woman, and by the way, this is a very serious problem. If you say this woman does have to do chalitza, there may be a brother living at the other side of the world that practically she's never going to get to. Which means this woman is an aguna for the rest of her life. She lives in a shtetl in Lithuania, and there's some brother living in Italy. Yeah? She's not gonna get that. She's not going to have the ability to do chalitza. And therefore, if we paskin that this baby, aged 8 months gestation, is a non-baby, and she has to therefore go and do chalitza, we're effectively consigning her to a life of being an aguna. That will be fine. Ah, so what's with a seven-month baby? What we say a seven-month baby will survive if the baby was born in dad. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about a seven-month baby. Yeah. No. She has to go there and you can't make a shliach. The whole business. So the Rashbash says in number 24. Just let me draw your attention to a number of important lines. Look at the underlined in the 4th-5th line down. This was in the earlier generations. Okay, aval asa, but now nishtane ha'inyanim. This is where the Rama is quoting from nishtane ha'inyanim, and the next underlined little bit, 2 lines down, v'kein harbe dvarim, many areas. Zachrum hachachamim al inyan. The rabbis describe something in a certain way. The anu moitzim, we find oisam al inyan acher, that it works differently. This is not an uncommon thing. And therefore he's happy to change the halacha based on nishtane ha'tzeva. I brought you in number 25, you can read it in your own time, a later tshuva of the Divrei Chaim, who was the Rebbe of Sanz, the Divrei Chaim of Sanz, who was living in the 1800s, who refused to rely on this. And he passed it in this situation that a woman who had a baby in this situation was required to do chalitza, even though the baby was born in 8 months, etc., etc., and he was not prepared to allow her to get married without a chalitza, based on the halacha of the Shulchan Aruch, and said, it's difficult for us to rely on the fact that just nature has changed. How can we say that this will allow this woman, because this is a very serious issue, if she gets married and she's not allowed to get married, that obviously brings with it all sorts of serious, very serious halachic problems for the children going forward. So, no, if the baby survived, that for sure is okay, we know it's a baby. You can't have like a 6-year-old kid wandering around saying, you're muksa, yeah? Like, you don't exist. We're talking about a situation where the baby was born, and we assume the baby was going to die, and the baby did die. If it was a full-term baby, and the baby died, okay, so it was a baby. Unfortunately, the baby got ill, and the baby died. But if it was an 8-month baby, maybe the baby was never alive. That's the problem. As far as I'm aware, yes. Born by what? IVF. IVF is I'm not sure exactly what you mean by making problems. It's a bit of a loaded phrase, but there is a debate as to the exact parenthood issues. Most poskim paskin that an IVF baby, which is genetically and gestationally the father and the mother, there's no question. I'm not sure that they're related. There's no issue of nishtane hateva. It's like we just have modern technology that didn't exist. Let me go on because I only have 15 minutes and I want to at least bring your attention to a few very important things. Chazal say number 26. Ha'ena isha mitaberes bebiya rishona. Women cannot get pregnant from the first sexual relations they have. It's not possible. And then we see that all sorts of women do. Okay, what do we say? Shh. So the Mishneh Halachas. Which is the Rav of Ungvar, what's his name? Fried, I think, I'm not sure. He paskens that Chazal didn't mean it's impossible to get pregnant from the first relations. He meant that most women don't get pregnant from the first relations. In fact, we see there are women that did, Hagar and Tamar and Leah and people like that, who did become pregnant from the Bia Rishona, and therefore sometimes you have to be slightly circumspect when you read something that Chazal say. Maybe you're reading it a little bit either too literally or too superficially, and we'll see other examples of that in a minute. Let me give you some interesting examples where the halacha clearly has changed. What about Bris Mila? Bris Mila, Chazal say, if a baby has a bris on a Thursday, then the third day, the Shabbos, is a very dangerous day, and you're allowed to be mechallel Shabbos to heat up water for a baby that had a bris on Thursday in order to wash it in hot water on Shabbos. I'm not talking about me mechallel Shabbos on Shabbos, for a bris on Shabbos. Everyone agrees you can do that. Look at number 28. Bizman chachmei ha-gemara, im loy hayu roichtim es avlad, if you didn't wash the baby, lifnei ha-mila, ula acha ha-mila, before and after the mila, uba yom ashlishi lamila, and on the third day after the mila, b'mayim chamim, in properly hot water, haya musukan, it was dangerous. And now, even the Shulchan Aruch is prepared to turn around and say, I'm not going to pass in this halacha, because times have changed. B'ha'idna, today, lo nagu berachitza klal, we don't do this washing, v'din lirchas b'shabbos imratzu k'din rechitza kol adam. And washing this baby who had a bris on Thursday is now no different to the halachas of washing any other person who's maybe sick, where you are allowed to heat water by asking a non-Jew, perhaps, but you're not allowed to actually break Shabbos to heat water to wash a person who's sick, unless they're in a life-threatening position. So he here paskened that today we don't break Shabbos in the way that in Chazal they did break Shabbos. And the opposite case is in 29. Chazal paskened that sakanat eiver, when a person has an accident, God forbid, on Shabbos, and they're in danger of losing a limb, you can't break Shabbos for that person, because losing a limb, say Chazal, is not pikuach nefesh. Now Chazal lists certain limbs which is pikuach nefesh, like, for example, an eye. Yeah? But if a person, God forbid, had a crushed leg or a crushed arm or something like that, Chazal would pass him, certainly you're allowed to ask a non-Jew and this and the other, but maybe you're not allowed to break Shabbos. Comes along the Titz Eliezer, and he says, today this is not the case. Today we assume that every danger that a person could lose a limb is a potential pikuach nefesh, because of blood poisoning potential and other things like that. And therefore he paskens that if a person is in a situation of sakonas eva, which is not obviously sakonas nefoshes, then the person can indeed go to hospital and double check that everything is okay. The shaila is going to come is what happens if the doctor tells them that there's no sakonas nefoshes, but that the person will lose the finger. Let's say the finger is badly injured, the doctor comes and checks on it and says, no, I think that the person will survive, there's no shaila, but the finger, you'll lose the finger if we don't do something within the next 15 minutes or 2 hours or whatever. Are you allowed to be mechal Shabbos? Then that's a different shaila, but for sakonas eva, where we're not sure, even though Chazal said you can't break Shabbos today, you can. So here you see two interesting examples. In 28, Chazal said you could break Shabbos, and today we don't. In 29, Chazal said, you can't break Shabbos, and today we do. What's that? Well, until they know what it is, they have to break Shabbos. The shaila is, they get there, they see the situation, they now know what it is, they've made a diagnosis, and now you're in a different matzav. When Hatzalah actually get there, and they see the person, if the person's okay, they don't continue to break Shabbos. If the person's okay. The person says they fainted, and they thought they, God forbid, had a heart attack. They call Hatzalah, they come, they see he's fainted, and they say, he's fainted, and we're not going to be Mechal Shabbos now. He'll come around in 15 minutes, whatever. Look, I'm not a doctor. but when they know there's no Sakonis Nefashis, they're not going to break Shabbos. If there's a Sophic, of course they will. The Shaila is, can Hatzalah then go home in the van, because they were called out in the van? That's a different Shaila as to whether they're allowed to break Shabbos so that they're ready for the next time. I need to go on, I'm sorry. A classic example coming up to Pesach is the issue of Shi'urim. How big is a kazayis? Okay? And I know that some people seem to think that a kazayis is bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger every year. Okay? One of the reasons why our kazayisim on Pesach are so big is because of this issue of the fingers and the eggs, and I'm sure people are well aware of this, and I could have spent a whole share on this, but decided not to. I didn't even give you a source, because once you get into it, then it's 15 minutes. But in a nutshell, basically, Chazal give two ways of measuring certain shiurim. One is an egg displacement volume measurement, and the other is a finger measurement. If you do those measurements today, it turns out that the finger measurement, okay, is much smaller than the egg measurement. Okay, and therefore Chazal have a choice. Either it turns out that fingers are bigger. Sorry, the egg measurement is smaller than the finger measurement. The egg's now measurement seems to be smaller than the finger measurement. So either you turn around and say that the fingers have grown from the time of Chazal, or the eggs have shrunk. And either way, you have to say something, because something's changed. Chazal make these two measures. And again, this is not a question of science. It's not a question where you could turn around like the Rambam said last week, and maybe Chazal expressed things in a way which was, you know, not advanced. You can measure an egg. You don't have to be a neurosurgeon to measure an egg. Chazal obviously measured eggs, they measured fingers, and they said these measurements equate. There's no suggestion at all that they, why should they have got that wrong? It just doesn't work today. Something obviously changed. And I think all of the situations we've really had up until now, it's very clear that something has changed. No one's really going to suggest that the answer is Chazal has made a mistake, because why do you need to say that? It's not necessary. The case of Matzitsa and Simani Trefus go together. They're very interesting. Matzitsa, of course, I'm not going to get into in detail, but when a person does a bris mila, Chazal bring down the part of the bris mila process that they need to draw a little bit of blood out of the Mokam Hamila after the Mila, and Chazal say that's for reasons of Sakana. If they don't draw out that little bit of blood, then it could be a danger for the baby. And the Shaila came up in the 19th century when people, there were already a lot of pressure from the reform movement that people shouldn't be doing this. And they said, look, we don't see today from a medical perspective that it's dangerous to perform a Bris Mila and not to do Matzitsa. Maybe we should stop doing Matzitsa. We should stop drawing out this blood. And there's an interesting tshuva of the Maram Shik. The Rav Shik's writing in Rosh Hashik in the mid-1800s, also very much in a battle with reform, and he says, no, absolutely not, we must continue to do Matzitsa, and he gives a couple of reasons. Number one, he said, because even if the doctors say it's safe, Chazal were more machmir in pikuach nefesh than the doctors. Even if the doctors say there's a one in a million chance and it's negligible, Chazal will say, no, it's still problematic, and we're going to do the Matzitsa anyway. But the most important point, I think, if you look after the three dots, three lines up from the bottom, he says, Avral Dibre Chazal miyusadim harbi mehem al halacha lemoshe misinai. Ish mipi ish ad Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom. Once you bring in the trump card that something is halacha lemoshe misinai, then there's really nothing to talk about. And in fairness, this card is not drawn very often. No one turned around and said, well, eating rotting fish, halacha lemoshe misinai. No one suggested this. But here, Matzitsa is an integral part of the Mila process. And he says back to Halacha Lemoshe Misinai, therefore, even if all the doctors in the world turn around and say that you can't do it, or you shouldn't do it, or you don't need to do it, we're not interested, and therefore we will continue to do it. Asher kol dibrei Elokeinu yakim la'olam, the eich nevatel dibrei Elokim chayim, how can we leave the words of God, mamash Halacha Lemoshe Misinai, v'asher shu Halacha Lemoshe Misinai, mipi umdus v'sfarat ha'rev, just because the doctors say it's not necessary, al pi hachipush v'hamisoyin, just because they've done experiments, and they've got experience in this. No, Halacha Lemoshe Misinai is Halacha Lemoshe Misinai. And if you flip over to page 7 for a second, you'll see that Rav Moshe Feinstein makes the same analysis when it comes to the issue of trephus. We saw last week the issue of trephus, things which are simanim of trephus in an animal. We do not change them, even though doctors today turn around and say this animal can survive with this disease and the other animal can't survive with a different disease. We stick to Chazal. Why? Because, again, he says, you see, he says, halacha, at the end of the first line, we call Mokum, hu halacha misinai, shehu daf kamasha haisa b'shas matan Torah, trey penez from itam zen noiti lamus, v'af kashi yishtanu hativim, even though there's an ishtane hateva, says Moshe, v'ez edvarim in certain areas, there's now it's not a trefa, now we do not change the halacha, and they underlined under that, it says, deshinu hativim loy yasu shinoi b'hadim. In this area, shinui hateva cannot relate in a change to halacha, because it's halacha l'moshe misinai. Now, in the last three examples before we finish off, are areas where it begins to become difficult to say Nishtane Hateva, and yet we still see that people do say Nishtane Hateva, but there begins to be a little bit of, if you like, uncomfortable, question as to why that is. For example, Chazal say very clearly, the cows cannot give birth in the first 2 months. 2 years, excuse me. In the first 2 years. It says very clearly, that's one of the ways of knowing if you're, if you have a bechor, if you gave birth, etc., etc. 3 years, 2 years, what have you. So a cow cannot give birth in the first 2 years. Tosfos comes along and says, in 34, Perish Dekoidim Shalosh, before 3 years, Vada lo yalda, the cow cannot have a child. V'yesh litzma. This is a big surprise, it says. The Hamasa bechol yoy, it's everyday occurrence. The parabash deshanim yoledes. 2-year-old cows do give birth. I'm not a farmer, but toast was said already in the Middle Ages. It must be that things work differently now. Now, you're going to have to turn around and say either there's been some kind of evolution in cow gynecology, or we have different cows these days than we had then, if you're going to say Nishtana Hatava. Because it's going to be more difficult to turn around and say that cows all of a sudden gestate in different ways, but maybe not, maybe it's possible. Similarly, there's a whole discussion in A18 there of bovine anatomy. The Gemara discusses the way a cow's lung works, and the Gemara makes a certain statement that a certain bit of the lung is very, very rare in cows. And Tosfos, again, observes in 35 that today all our cows have this bit of the lung. Therefore, what changed? It must be Mishnah Hatava. Maybe the cows now have this, and they didn't used to have this. Again, I don't know how realistic that is if you ask a doctor or a vet, I suppose a veterinary surgeon, that it's cows have developed this part of their anatomy in a way that they didn't have it before, or maybe it's just different species of cows, some do, some don't, etc. Similarly, animal gestation, the Gemara makes statements that it says a wolf and a lion and a bear take 3 years to gestate their young, and a snake takes 7 years to gestate its young. I mean, it just doesn't. Today, that's not how long it takes for a baby bear to be born, and therefore the question is, what change do we say Nishtana Hatava? Perhaps the most striking example of this, you'd excuse me for bringing it, but it's very interesting, is that the Gemara in Bechorah says very clearly that the sperm and the urine come out from two totally different tubes inside the male anatomy. There's not one, but there's two, and this obviously is not the case in terms of anatomy. It just doesn't work that way. And I brought you on page 8, which you may find interesting, an extensive note in the Art Scroll Gemara where it discusses what are you going to say about this? Are you going to turn around and say Nishtane Hateva? And the Chazanish does say Nishtane Hateva. Things, people just ain't built like they used to be. Yeah? And there are other modern posts that turn around and say, no, no, no. It's just too far. You cannot argue that there's been a sort of micro-evolution in human anatomy from 2,000 years ago to today. And this is a very, very, very major change in anatomy from a medical perspective. So you can't say that. And therefore other people say Chazal must have been talking internally, that there are different tubes, which of course there are. That is the case. There are different pipes going in different places to carry different things. But within the actual male anatomy itself, there are not two pipes, and therefore there's a whole discussion as to how this works. I will leave you with a little something slightly different, but very interesting when it comes to spiritual issues. Do we say Nishtane Hateva when it comes to spiritual issues? And I brought you three examples where we do, or two or three examples. The first one is in dreams. In source number 39, the Shulchan Aruch Harav discusses different dream interpretations that the Gemara gives and says, if you dream about this, then it's a bad thing. And if you dream about this, then it's a good thing. If you dream you're standing in Shul on Yom Kippur in the Ela, then that's not good. And other things like that. The Shulchan Aruch Harav, who is the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, he brings down, he says, today the spiritual reality is so different that dreams mean different things today. And if you dream a certain dream and you ask what this means, it no longer means the same thing as it meant in the time of the Gemara. Why? Nothing physical going on here, but spiritual issues. If you learn the Derech Hashem and how dreams work, dreams are different levels of the soul from a Kabbalistic perspective, detaching and coming back into the mind with different messages from different places where the soul could have gone during sleep. It's different. Similarly with Ruach Ra, there's a whole shaila as to whether you have to wash your hands when you wake up in the morning, and for other things. Chazal talk about Ruach Ra, and they say this is dangerous and that's dangerous. Many of these things, the Rambam just misses out. He just leaves them out, and the poskim sometimes do bring them, don't bring them. And they turn around and say that today, maybe Ruach Ra doesn't exist in the same way that it did exist. And the Rambam is very famous for being of the opinion that demons, Shadim, and they just don't exist. And the question is, did the Rambam think they ever existed, or is he saying that they used to exist and now they don't exist? That's an interesting question, and really, just for your personal reading, just let me tell you what it is. I brought you on in source 42 at the very end, a very beautiful piece of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, where Rav Yaakov wants to make shalom between the Rambam and everybody else. Definitely was someone who wanted to make shalom in many areas. And he wants to say like this, the spiritual reality may depend on the spiritual nature of the people. In the time of Chazal, when people were spiritually higher, so they were demons, there was Ruach Ra, by the time of the Rambam, when the people are spiritually lower, so then there wasn't Ruach around, there wasn't demons, and maybe later on with the Kabbalah, and then there is demons, and that, it could change. He talks about dibuks, and why, whether we can have a dibuk today, or we can't have a dibuk, and he says it could be, what's this? He brings the Chofetz Chaim, who said there wouldn't be any more dibuks anymore, and he says the reason is because our spiritual level has dropped, and now we don't have the same spiritual reality. Rav, the Vilna Gaon very famously said when the Ger Tzedek of Vilna was killed, was martyred, Rav Avram ben Avram, the Ger Tzedek of Vilna, he said the Kayach of Kedusha from that martyrdom removed lots of the Ruach Ra from the world. And therefore the spiritual matzav is now different, Mishnah HaTeva in that sense. I brought you at the very end some reading, further reading. There is an entire sefer, which I must confess to you I was unable to get my hands on, but I would like to try and get hold of, by Rav Neria Gutel, called Sefer Hishtanut HaTevaim, which deals entirely with this issue. He has an entire sefer on the point, but I did bring you some other references. There's a very good article in the Journal of Halacha, there's some stuff on the web that you can see in various other journals. So, a very interesting area of Halacha, and we see, just to sum up, that Nishtane HaTeva in many cases does result in a change of Halacha. In some cases of Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, maybe it does not. But in many areas, this is one of the main sources today of halachic change from things that happened in the time of the Gemara. Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, the more tricky issue of social change and women's issues.